Hey, this is Richard Deitch from the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. Got a really, really fun episode today. It's media conversation with John Orand of the Sports Business Daily and Jimmy Trina of Awful Announcing. Obviously, as most of you know, my former colleague at Sports Illustrated. We get into a lot of media topics. One of them, which is pretty good conversation, why are the NFL ratings tanking this season?
Prime time is really where the NFL's getting killed. It's Monday night, Thursday night, and Sunday night that are down substantially. If you just take a look at the primetime news network numbers, Fox News, CNN, and MSNBC, those are up like double digits. They're up by like, you know, millions of viewers. Those millions of viewers have to be coming from somewhere.
On top of that, we're going to be talking about whether HBO should make changes to Bill Simmons' Any Given Wednesday. We'll talk about Fox Sports 1, the Cubs' effect on that network, and whether they can sustain their ratings, ESPN subscriber losses, and whether and how much ESPN should be worried about that. We'll drop a couple questions about Mike Francesa for Jimmy Trina, who is a longtime connoisseur. Ask John Orand about Mike and Mike and some other changes potentially happening at ESPN. And it's basically just going to be an hour of fun media talk. Think you guys are really going to enjoy it. Coming up with John Orand and Jimmy Trina. All right, welcome back to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. Very excited about this episode. I've had both of these men on before as solo guests to talk sports media, but I decided to experiment and bring on both John Orand of the Sports Business Daily and Jimmy Trina of Awful Announcing at the moment, but obviously previously Fox Sports and Sports Illustrated. So we'll make this a three-person sports media gab session as opposed to two. John Orand is in Washington, D.C. Jimmy Trina, I believe, somewhere in Long Island. Gentlemen, welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
This could be a disaster, Richard.
Jimmy, you have any thoughts on that?
I have faith. I think this will be not a disaster. All right. I'm not going to say it's going to be good, but not a disaster.
Hopefully better than Phil Mushnick combining Kevin Garnett and Katie Nolan in a column. Let's start off with you, John Orand, and then Jimmy, you go next. It's going to be a little tricky because nobody can see each other. But John, let's start with NFL ratings and the decline this year, because that is a story, and understandably so, that a ton of people have written about. I find it fascinating because you're trying to figure out whether it's a one-year blip, whether you think it's the election coverage in men between the ages of 25 and 55 going to cable news when the NFL primetime games are on. Obviously, maybe it's because the games themselves have been terrible. We have star quarterback issues in the league. I do not believe that it is a protest against Colin Kaepernick's undue. I don't have to go through the litany of hypotheses that are out there, but I do want to get your take, because you were one of the first reporters to write about this. We're now, we taped this, we're in November, first day of November. What have you gleaned from the decline in NFL ratings, and do you think this is a blip or something larger?
Well, I do love reading all these stories coming out and tweets, because I think that whatever people are irritated about with the NFL is what they grasp on to say is the reason for the downturn. I mean, I happen to think that the NFL is fine. I think that the NFL ratings next year are going to see a huge bump up. And I think that it's, you really don't need to look too much further than the election, which is taking in prime time. And prime time is really where the NFL is getting killed. Their Sunday afternoon packages are down, but they're not down significantly. It's Monday night, Thursday night, and Sunday night that are down substantially. And if you just take a look at the primetime news network numbers, Fox News, CNN, and MSNBC, those are up like double digits. They're up by like millions of viewers. Those millions of viewers have to be coming from somewhere. You add on to it the Cubs in the World Series, which is something I always use my mom as an example. She knows that the Cubs haven't won, you know, in more than 100 years. So it's something that brings in the casual fan even more than like the Yankees, which is sort of the biggest brand and the biggest market out there. So I think that the NFL is really getting hurt by the election cycle. I think it's going to bounce back next year, and I think that we're just going to be just as annoyed next year by the NFL bounce back numbers.
It's interesting. I'm sure others might have said it. You're the first person who've said that you think the NFL, or at least that I've heard, will bounce back in big numbers. Jimmy John cited the primetime games. I have two of the stats here. Prior to this week when we're taping this 1st of November, NBC Sunday Night Football was down 19%, and ESPN's Monday Night Football was down 24%. Those are massive drops. While I agree with John that the election is certainly maybe the most significant factor, I am one who believes the quality of games has taken some people away this year. I think the league is not as interesting with the star quarterbacks. I think fantasy, personally, may have peaked, and I think that could like add a little bit of a tick to the decline in ratings. And maybe the DraftKings FanDuel not being as crazed this year as it was last year might have something to do with it. So what are your thoughts on why this is happening, Jimmy?
I agree with both of you. I think the election is the biggest factor. But, of course, when something like this happens, it's not one factor. It's multiple factors. I think the election is the biggest factor. I think when it's over, I'm not even – it might still take a week or two for the NFL numbers to come back, and I think they'll come back. But I think they're only going to come back maybe 50% from what the decline is. I think the other factor in this is they have a lot of problems on the field right now. The games have not been great. There's a lack of star power, it seems like, especially at quarterback. You have Tom Brady, and then I don't know, Cam Newton. I don't know if he's bringing viewers. There's a lack of star power at the quarterback position. And I think,
how come you didn't mention Kirk Cousins there? I don't get it.
Yeah, I'm not. Even though they had a good rating, I know, for the London game, I'm not sure Kirk is bringing the fringe fan to the television. And the other issue, too, is, you know, the three best teams in the league, New England, Denver, Minnesota, two of those teams, Denver and Minnesota, they're there because of their defense, not because of their – they both have below-average offenses. They're there because of their defense. So, and that's not going to bring viewers to the table, the fringe viewer especially. So, I think the refereeing is a problem. The one thing I'm shocked about is I am surprised how many people who follow me on Twitter have told me there's too much football, especially on a day like yesterday where the day starts at 9:30 Eastern and ends at midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. You'd think for the diehard fan they would love that, but the fringe, it's a lot of football. Then, you know, you throw in the Thursday night game as well. You know, because I look at this as mainly the diehard fan is going to be there, but even the diehard fans have had some oversaturation issues. So while I think the ratings will come back a little bit, decently, after the election, they're not going to come back to be what they were last year, I don't think.
Whose phone was that, by the way, in the background?
The SBJ office going nuts in here. Right. Yeah, I apologize.
If it was Jimmy, I would have said lack of professionalism, but I understand in John's case. He's
Jimmy, I think the funny thing about that is, because I hear the same thing, but there are no more games this year than there have been for 10 years. I mean, 10 years ago, they expanded Thursday night football.
The Thursday night, and then combined with these London games, they're going to have more London games this year than ever before. So I think there's something there. You know, and I think it's the totality of things, too. You mentioned the World Series. You have the Cubs in it, so now more people are watching the World Series than ever before. The amount of college football that's on, I mean, if you're a guy who's watching college football all day Saturday, then you're back at it all day Sunday. It's a lot. So I think maybe it's just, you know, it reached a peak, but I think the saturation's a little bit of a factor. I think it's more about election, lack of star power, quarterback, lack of exciting teams. Here's the NFL had a bunch of teams that a lot of people thought were going to be really good, were sort of on the rise, and they all sort of came back down to earth at once. Seattle, Arizona, Green Bay. The two New York teams are mediocre. The big market in Chicago, the team stinks, unwatchable. So I do think on-field is a big, big factor in this.
That's interesting, Jimmy. John, I want to ask you a question on sort of some of the theses here. And please, John, let me know. Maybe I'm just being a East Coast elitist, social justice warrior, hipster, cripster, coffee house drinking Joe. But the idea that people have decided not to watch their NFL team because Colin Kaepernick is protesting the anthem in San Francisco makes no sense to me as someone who's a television observer. Because, John, we write a lot about sort of viewer habits and how hard it's been for Fox Sports 1 to change people's viewing habits to leave ESPN. So if you just think about this logically, you're asking a fan because of an action taken by someone who has no connection to his or her team to then not watch his or her team because you are so bothered by this player or a couple players' actions. I've seen, the one or two polls that state that this is a big reason. But, John, for the life of me, that just does not play, in my opinion. I don't buy in the slightest that backlash to Kaepernick's protests has anything to do with the ratings dropping. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I have to tell you, there's not one person who deals with numbers and networks that cites that as even a potential reason. I know that it's been a cost celeb. That on my Twitter mentions, gets mentioned more than just about any other reason that comes up. But I have to tell you, like, I talked to Artie at ESPN, Mulvihill at Fox, NBC guys, nobody, not one of them has been able to cite the Colin Kaepernick as a potential reason for that.
Jimmy, you get accused occasionally of being part of that East Coast media elite. Are you with me here in the fact that you're a Bills fan in Buffalo? Somehow you're not going to watch the Bills play the Patriots, even if you are ticked off at Colin Kaepernick? That makes no sense to me.
It's the stupidest thing I've ever heard, and it's not even worth discussing. No one's passing on Eagles Cowboys last night because Colin Kaepernick goes down to one knee. And the Niners had a bye this week. Does that mean those people watch this week, or does the protest still hold up?
Right. Well,
the ratings issues are for the primetime games. The 1 o'clock and 4 o'clock windows are not getting crushed the way the primetime games are. So the protest makes no sense as a discussion point in this.
John, there was a report out not too long ago from Nielsen that ESPN had lost a remarkable number of subscribers in the hundreds of thousands. As we're taping this, Nielsen has sort of called that back a little bit to say that they're not sure if the numbers that they released are accurate, at least for this particular cycle in terms of the losses. But it's very clear that ESPN is losing subscribers, as other cable sports networks are. You have worked in cable for a long time in terms of covering this industry. You worked at Cable Facts before. You worked at Sports Business Daily and Journal. So you're a great person to ask this. Do you have a sense, John, of where the bottoming out might be? So let's, ESPN once was in 100 million homes. It's now, I think, you might know the numbers better than me, but I'm going to say like 88 or 89 million. Are we going to get to the point one day where they're at 50 million, or does the bottom eventually find itself at 75 million, and that's where millennials today will be at? And while it's not as humongous as a business as it was in the 90s, it's still an incredible powerhouse. Or, as some of the doomsdayers think, do you think it all blows up and one day ESPN's going to be one of these premium services that you pay $30 for and it's in 25 million homes as opposed to 100 million?
Yeah, that's particularly interesting, Richard, because nobody knows where the bottom is. But we do know that the entire cable industry is losing subscribers, and it is going to bottom out, and it's not going to necessarily bottom out at zero, certainly not within the next 10 years or 15 years. And I think that what you're seeing ESPN do, which I think is pretty smart, is they have a deal with Sling TV, and they have a deal with, they're getting on Amazon, and they're doing a lot of these deals that sort of bypass the cable operator, bypass the satellite operator in terms of getting everything out there. But if you're ESPN and if you're Fox and if you're NBC, it is crucially important that they keep this cable system, this cable business, healthy and robust, because that's where they get the most money. I mean, so when Nielsen came out and said that, ESPN lost 600,000 homes off their footprint last month, which apparently is not true at all. I think that we're going to see Nielsen come out with a new report that doesn't show any significant loss at all for the month. It's a big deal because ESPN gets $7.50 per subscriber per month. So, losing 650,000, that's a ton. So nobody knows. I'm not even going to try to predict where the bottom is, but ESPN is, it's going to be interesting to see how sports leagues treat ESPN when it's in, you know, say 80 million homes or 75 million homes versus the broadcast networks that are in about 116 million homes, because that's sort of where everything was back in the mid-90s as ESPN was doing the rise. And now ESPN sort of got, and all the, I say ESPN, I mean all the cable networks are sort of coming back a little bit.
That's interesting, John. And I'm one who believes, as crazy as this sounds, I think we may see in the next 10 to 15 years in the NFL a lessening of costs for some of these packages. I understand Roger Goodell wants to get to the $25 billion number, but I think that league's going to have to be realistic. Jimmy, you don't cover this every day like John does, and to an extent I do in terms of the number of homes, et cetera. But, you know, you write about media and you certainly follow it. You worked at Fox, so you have some great insight in terms of the place that's trying to upend ESPN. Jimmy, if you had to guess 10 years from now, what kind of popularity do you think networks like ESPN, FS1, NBC Sports Network, let's forget about CBS Sports Network for the moment, but those big three, what kind of popularity do you think they'll have in terms of viewers who are actively paying for them?
It all depends on what sport packages they have. You know, if 10 years from now, ESPN has a Monday Night Football game, if 10 years from now, and I think they still will, you know the contract way better than me, but that contract they have locked in with the NCAA for the playoff is very lengthy, if I'm not mistaken.
John, you know that. What is that? They're 20. They just re-upped, right? What is that now?
Yeah, I mean, to that point, their deal with like the SEC goes through 2034.
Right.
So, I mean, they're not going anywhere anytime soon.
Right, right.
Right, and if they're airing, you know, the college football playoff and finals, and they're airing an NFL game every week, and they're airing, you know, Major League Baseball playoff game, they're going to be fine. This isn't my forte. What fascinates me about this is, despite, you know, the Donald Trump and the deplorables who've sort of made their mark here with disregarding facts, when you look at facts, ESPN has lost the number of subscribers, you say. That's a fact. They've lost that many. But what I would love to know is, though, how many of those people, though, still watch ESPN with someone else's password? Because ESPN puts everything on Watch ESPN. Everything they air is on there. So all you need is one person with a password, and you can have so many people. See, they've lost subscribers, which is going to hurt their bottom line in terms of money. But what I would love to know is how many people are watching ESPN less. I don't think that number is nearly as big as you would think based on what they've lost in terms of subscribers.
Well, John, you see the Watch ESPN numbers, John.
Yeah, I did that story about a year or so ago, and I was shocked because I thought, you know, millennials, everybody in college, young people just out of college, you know, are taking their parents' passwords. I personally know people in their 40s that are using their parents' passwords to watch it. But again, every single network says that they run the numbers. They know who's stealing the passwords. It isn't a big secret to them. And they say it is so negligible that it's not even worth sort of going and really making a big stink about.
That's interesting. I think they might be underselling that, but I'm not sure how big it is either. All right, we're gonna sort of do roundtable here, so we'll keep going to different topics. Jimmy, I want to start with you. You worked at Fox Sports. You were not on one of these debate shows, but you were part of that world as they were developing it. And now we see that Skip Bayless is at Fox, and essentially he has become their morning block in terms of how they are pitching themselves to the public. That leads into Coward. That will eventually lead into a new show. There's going to be a morning show to compete against the Mike and Mikes and Good Morning Football. So they've gone all in, Jimmy, on debate-style television. Not too long ago, you did a really funny piece. We're Awful Announcing assigned you to watch debate for the
funny.
Entire...
Funny. I felt bad for him.
Yeah, see, the man, he survived it, John.
Have you recovered from this yet?
So, yeah, we'll ask him about that, John. He survived it somehow. So, Jimmy, you know, it's interesting. And listen, everybody knows how I feel about Bayless and some of these other shows. But you actually, like, I mean, you invested in it. So you felt it. You had to live through this. So what were some of your takeaways from watching this for a day? And what is your takeaway from whether this as a programming philosophy can work against what is ESPN's philosophy?
Well, first, let me give the listeners a little behind the scenes nugget here from the days when you and I worked together at SI.
Right.
Now, the truth of the matter is this, and this is the honest to God's truth. I never, ever, ever watched those debate shows, ever. I don't have any interest in them. I never bothered watching them. I have my own things that I watched, and I never bothered watching them. But if you're on Twitter, you can't escape them because people are tweeting about all the stupid stuff that Skip Bayless says all the time. Someone in particular does that. I won't name names, but he may be on this call, and it's not John Oram.
Right.
So the best, though, was we would be working together at SI, and, you know, you have your vendetta and your obsession with Skip Bayless.
Well, vendetta even. I'm not sure it's a vendetta. If you want to say obsession, I think that's still too strong, but all right, go on.
But it would double down on the obsession, Jimmy. You're good.
But it would always crack me up that this guy is saying stupid stuff on this awful show. And whenever I walk by your office at whatever time that show was on, you were there in your chair, feet up on your desk, with your face glued to the television watching this man.
I'm not even sure that's so true.
And I would say to you, why are you watching this? And you would use the excuse that it's your job, which I don't know about that. I find that questionable. I think you could do your job without watching that. But the fact is, you love to watch that show and get mad at what the guy was saying.
I'm not sure you even answered my question, by the way. Listen, there's no doubt that...
Now I'm going to answer the question, but I wanted to get that
seems to be a bit of an oversell of my interest in that show. There's no doubt I watched First Take, and there's no doubt when Bayless does something on Twitter that's just healing LeBron or something else, it does bother me. But that may be an oversell on your part. I'm not sure there's no doubt at certain times. At certain times at 10 o'clock, I'm sure I was watching CNN or C-SPAN or something else, James. No?
Right. I'm sure you were watching.
All right, continue.
Here's my take on those shows. Listen, those shows are awful and I can't watch them. I physically cannot watch them. But again, my issue really isn't with the shows or with Skip Bayless. It's the people who watch them. I mean, he's doing what he has to do to get his paycheck. It worked out for him. What is he getting? $6 million from FS1?
Six and a half per year, yeah.
Right. So he's playing the game. The issue should be with people who watch that. That's what I find mind-boggling.
No, the issue should be with the networks and producers and executives who put it on the air. I would disagree with you there.
Yeah, but if it's getting the audience that it gets, now I will say this, okay? Because I know the FS1 spin which is so comical, and again, it's sad that people who don't work in the business don't understand this because their whole spin is, you know, it's getting whatever 80,000 viewers. We're up 8 kajillion percent from what. Well, they aired reruns of a highlight show last year. So You're paying this guy $6 million. I would hope you're getting 80,000 viewers for that kind of money.
Yeah, this podcast could probably get 120% increase over last year, I'm thinking, if we film this right now.
I wouldn't go that
far. Well, what I found to be amazing about that story that you wrote is that there were probably five topics that day that every single show hit on and then re-hit on and then came in. And so you watched it in a way from start to finish that people aren't watching daytime sports TV. I mean, and people come in and snack it and they come back out. But there are only so many sort of debate touch points that people come in and really start to I don't watch a lot, but I was fascinated with Colin Coward's show coming right after a World Series game. And he started with about a half hour on the NFL. And Fox is carrying, you know, the World Series. There might have been a baseball playoff game, but Fox is playing. They're carrying MLB. It's important to them. And, you know, if that were on ESPN, you know, they'd probably be leading with what they had and then get into the football. But that doesn't seem to be working over at FS1.
Getting back to the point, Jimmy, I am curious if you think this strategy can work as a long-term play to draw viewers. If I read your piece, it is not a place I would be visiting every day, but maybe you think otherwise.
No, listen, I don't understand. If the plan is to have debate from 6 a.m. until 7 o'clock at night, I don't really see how that, I mean, it's cheap programming. Maybe it is worth doing. I mean, clearly listen, no matter what you say, what I say, whether I like it, don't like it, you don't like it, there is some sort of audience for debate. So if you're giving them that and you get that audience and it's not costing you a ton of money, from a business standpoint, it's not the worst thing in the world.
John, let me ask
you. But, I mean, we're not going to watch it.
We're so focused on sports TV. I mean, take a look at anybody that's watching CNN now. Every single show is turned into Crossfire over there. And it's similar at Fox. The news networks, all these live studio shows are making their money based on sort of ginning up a debate like that.
Right, but John. The question there on John, of course, is that does that content end November 9th? Because the conflict in terms of the election ends, and can you still gin it up? But maybe you can, given that if Trump wins, you're going to have 4 years of – I couldn't even think about it. And if Clinton wins, same idea. You're going to have 4 years of people who dislike her. Sorry, Jimmy, go ahead.
I think that's an apples and oranges comparison from this standpoint. What CNN and MSNBC and Fox do is they get on a couple of people who support Hillary, they get on a couple of people who hate Trump, and they let them duke it out. Sports is not like that. So my issue with those debate shows, and this is what I wrote too, is I feel like it's so manufactured and a lot of it is fake and it's not legitimate. The topics are discussed beforehand, and it's like, okay, you take this side of the argument and you take this side of the argument. And I think people on those shows say things they don't even believe because they have to have the argument. Whereas when the news shows do it, they're getting people who believe those positions, as crazy as some of them are. So I think that, you know, if you want to talk about last night's Cowboys-Eagles game, you don't necessarily have to disagree on what happened in the game. You can have a discussion about it, but those shows you have to have a disagreement. And that's why I feel like they're just so fake and not real. Whereas the political stuff, it's insane, but at least I feel like it's real.
John, let me ask you about FS1 in terms of, we know, John, you don't want to say anything bad about Jamie Horowitz and Charlie Dixon. I know these are your guys, so I'm gonna ask you something on a different level here. FS1.
I need better guys, right. Richard.
Well, you go for Shanks. FS1 has had an excellent 14 days, or had an excellent 14 days, because of the Cubs. I wrote a piece on sort of the Cubs effect on FS1. I don't have it in front of me, but something to the effect of 8 of their 10 most watched broadcasts in their history are Cubs games. The Cubs vaulted, the late night programming after games like Fox Sports Live with Jay and Dan, Katie Nolan's Garbage Time. Those shows saw, I don't know if they saw highs per se, but they saw some unbelievable ratings after those games. The daytime programming was buoyed by Fox's coverage of the Cubs. You saw the Bayless Show reach a show high during that run. And so, John, the awareness factor for FS1 was really helped by the Cubs. You've seen Fox Sports national president, or whatever his title is, Jamie Horowitz, throwing all sorts of promos during the World Series and during the National League Championship Series. And listen, if his boss is going to let him use that real estate, God bless him. So it's gotten, I think, a lot more eyeballs and a lot more notice in the marketplace. So here's my question for you, John. It's a long preamble. Do you think this sticks? Will the 14 days of sort of dream Cubs-like ratings ultimately bring more people into this tent 6 months, 1 year from now? Or do you think this was a dream 14-day blip, and a year from now, the Coward Show, the Bayless Show will be getting the same numbers that they got 3 weeks ago, a month ago?
Now, my guess is that the ratings will go up a little bit, but I don't think this is a blip. I think this is part of Fox's strategy. I mean, it's all based around these live ratings. And so you're going to bring in a huge audience to watch the Cubs, and then you have to provide, instead of the reruns that they used to have, you provide live programming that will enable people to stick with your show. So like, oh, well, I want to see what's going on here. And so once baseball ends, they're going to bring in some big audiences with college football, and then they're going to bring in big audiences with some of their college basketball, UFC, you know, and U.S. Open golf. They have a lot of big-time rights, and so I think what they've done and what their strategy is isn't necessarily to create something that's going to be getting, you know, millions of viewers in the middle of the day. It's more for when they do get 10 million viewers to watch a game, there's a stopgap there to keep them within the system for longer. And I think that that's been effective so far.
Jimmy, is there anything you want to add on that topic, or do you want me to move on to something else?
I would just say that I think their ratings will come back down to what they were before the World Series. I don't think they will see an increase.
Jimmy, when you were there, were you asked at all to do any kind of television? Because at a certain point, you know, these guys were looking for anybody and everybody to be part of this debate cycle. So I'm wondering if they had asked you at all.
I mean, they didn't ask me to, like, you know, have a show. They had asked me if I wanted to be on a show as a guest or whatever. but not like, you know, giving me my own vehicle.
Did
you go on air?
Did you go on air? Maybe I missed it.
No, I did not. No.
So not being a team player there, Jimmy. Was there a reason for that?
Yeah, I'm not a TV person.
All right, well.
You know, I'm a web person. I know my role.
If I was your CAA agent, I might say, you know, multimedia. All right, listen.
Yeah, but then I would have maybe ended up on one of those shows, and then I would have had to kill myself.
Maybe you'd be the third guy and speak for yourself. Who knows? All right. Yes, I
rest my case.
All right, listen. Here are some questions that we got from people. John, we're eventually going to get to Santomir. I just read this love letter you wrote to him, so we'll get to that in a second. What are, John Oran, the top sports media storylines that we should be watching for in 2017?
You know, for me, it goes back to what we were talking about with ESPN and they're losing subscribers. It's really a relatively small deal, and the viewership so far is pretty low. But this Twitter NFL deal is like it's the future, potentially, of the way we're going to consume sports. And to me, at some point, a big digital company, be it Amazon, be it Twitter, Facebook, you know, Google, who knows, is going to step in and really collect some rights. And you're seeing the migration happening toward digital. You're seeing cable networks losing subscribers, and you're seeing deals like this Twitter deal, and I think you're going to see more of it, and I'm just curious to see how these viewer numbers start to grow a little bit.
It's interesting. I would agree with that, Jimmy, and it sort of your top sports media storyline to look for in 2017?
I think it's going to be what happens with Bill Simmons and his HBO show.
Oh, that's interesting. That's an interesting story, although that would not be what I think is the top. So that's interesting that first came to mind for you. Why do you think that is?
The top would probably be what happens with the NFL ratings, but right. I didn't want to say that again. I thought there'd be bigger buzz around his HBO show, and I'd be interested to see if they tweak it. And I think some tweaks could help, like going live and switching the day and time, and I'll be curious to see if they do that.
Interesting. I actually literally just as we're taping this, I wrote about that this week, and I agree with you, Jimmy, on tweaking the show. I think Bill would be helped by a co-host. Somebody like Jalen Rose, who he had great chemistry with, it also takes a little bit of the mic away from Bill, which I think makes it just an easier handle for him. I do not like Wednesdays as a weekly sports show. I think I'm sure HBO and Simmons thought about this, but that to me, that's a killer because if you recap stuff, it feels old, but if you preview stuff, it feels old. So you're in no person's
land. I don't know why they don't try to pair him up with either Bill Maher on Fridays or John Oliver on Sundays. You know, and do a back-to-back, you know, live block there. Plus, it's the weekend, which is a good time for, you know, he's on Wednesdays at 10. He's always going to be competing with a live sports event, and he's a taped show. So,
right.
You know, if he's going against the World Series, he's going against an NBA game, why are you going to watch his show, which you know is taped, so you know that, you're not going to see any good fireworks if it's taped. So, you know, I think you got to put him on live, and I think you got to put him on 10, 11 o'clock on a weekend, and I think that would be huge.
I've never talked to him, actually, about live versus tape, but I think there is something dangerous about live television. John, you know, there's been a lot of think pieces on Simmons, and understandably so, given, you know, the most popular sports writer in the country, if you even want to still tag him as a sports writer, sort of more of a media brand at this point. Some suggesting that HBO is going to cut them. That seems insane to me. You don't invest 5 years in somebody and then cut bait after one. But I think Jimmy's right in that there's no way around. I like Simmons and I root for his success, but the first run numbers are not good. There's no spinning that. It is what it is. How do you see his relationship with HBO? Do you think HBO makes dramatic changes with any given Wednesday and specifically changes with Simmons?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see some tweaks here and there. I think the big question, and I don't know the answer to this, is the way that HBO makes their programming decisions is less about how many people are watching it live as opposed to how many new people are they bringing into the tent to pay because they want to see that show. So they'll subscribe to HBO, or how much is he moving the needle digitally. But what I find to be fascinating about this is Bill Simmons is, you described him as probably the most famous sports writer in America today. I would agree with that. I think his podcast is probably, this notwithstanding, the best sports podcast, or certainly the most downloaded sports podcast.
Actually, it's John, it's, first of all, no offense to me. We're not in the same ballpark in Dallas, but pardon my take, is the most popular sports podcast right now from Barstool. And I actually think it's the best too now.
But my point is, like, he's a superstar when it comes to
Agreed. No argument. Yep.
And he has a ton of ads on the podcast. The Ringer is, I'm assuming, doing well enough that they're hiring big name talent, and the big name talent is producing a lot. And it's like you've said, he's getting out there and making these hires and building something in journalism when few people are building stuff in journalism. What is it about TV that make these people have to get on? So to me, it's like a thinking that's rooted, like, you know, 10 years ago almost.
John, you know the reason for this, John. The reason is money. You can't make the millions and millions of dollars that Simmons is being paid from HBO via podcasting and creating your digital brand. I mean, maybe Bill can, but if you're Katie Nolan, you're not making the kind of money you potentially could make from Fox if you're just a digital player. So while I understand where you're coming from in terms of, you know, why do you just want to sort of throw yourself into the hat to just be another person, you know, John, both of us talk to a lot of agents. We know the people at IF and CAA and, you know, the Montags of the world, et cetera. The money is still in TV and it's life-changing money. So that's, don't you think that's why Simmons, the white whale for Simmons is that? Because you know what? Even if you spectacularly fail, you can buy a house in Malibu while you fail. That's why you jump to TV, no?
No, look, Simmons' HBO contract is, of course, I understand why he's doing that. I still think it's sort of like, almost like focus on what you're great at. Katie Nolan is under an FS1 contract. You know, I don't know how much of a bump she got for her TV show, but it's like a time slot. Like, if I were advising her, I'd be like, no, wait, get a better time slot where you can be successful. I mean, if they're not willing to provide it, then stay back and do what you've been doing to become a star, which is, you know, what you've been doing for the past, you know, 5 years or so on digital platforms.
Jimmy, you're someone who loves money. So why don't you focus? Why don't you tell me what you think of this?
Well, I'm not going to blame anyone for taking a TV gig, no matter the time slot. I mean, like you said, that the money is in TV. And I also think, like, you know, Katie's a little bit of a different case than Bill, because Bill was on the ESPN NBA show. Katie, though, is, you know, this was her first show. She's got to start somewhere. She's got to, you know, I mean, I think this is obviously her first gig. I think it's a stepping stone for her, and she's working on her craft doing it this way. So I don't have any issues there.
Go ahead, John.
No, I mean, I think my point isn't, I don't begrudge her taking the show.
Right.
I just think, like, Katie maybe didn't have the NBA show. She's a bona fide star who I think could have gotten a better time slot, or could have ensured that she got a time slot.
Yeah, but she wasn't when they gave her that. She didn't have the juice to dictate her own time slot when she got that show.
Oh, I think she had more
juice. Maybe now she does, but when she first got it, she didn't.
I like when you 2 hours are fighting. We need more of that. There's no doubt that...
Oh, yeah, that was a knockout, drag out right there.
Yeah, it wasn't exactly... it wasn't Hagler-Hearns. Jimmy is right in the sense, John, that, like, when she did start...
Say that again.
Yeah, I know. It hurts. She's coming off the Regis show, and while I think they think she's a bright talent, for lack of a better phrase, her Q rating is not at what it was now. Where John is right, Jimmy, is that Fox Sports 1 has essentially no women in any kind of premier roles, especially as opinionists. So Katie Nolan has a ton of leverage on that network. You know, ESPN has the Michelle Beatles and Sage Steele and Rachel Nichols and a million women in prominent roles.
If they care about that.
Well, that's true. But I don't think you can have a total network where you don't have a woman in a single high-profile role. John, do you buy that she does have leverage in that as a woman in the sports business who has proven she can at least handle a solo show that offers opinions? That's a very valuable commodity. I mean, I'd like to think that Jamie Horowitz and Charlie Dixon want to expand their Peking dynasty here beyond just men.
When the Fox Sports 1 intern transcribes this, is he going to skip over this section, do you think?
No, I think he's going to put it in. I think he's going to make it 18 font, not skipping over it at all.
All bold. No, I think that Katie coming off the Regis, we say coming off the Regis show as though that was the only thing she was doing. She's a bona fide star in the digital realm. I think that she had a lot more juice than than just being one of an ensemble on a show that didn't
work. Jimmy Traffic, I mean, you know, Jimmy, you're probably closer to this than John. She did a lot of videos for Guyism, and again, that got noticed, but I don't know. Yeah, I think John's overselling here a little. You, Jimmy? I'm talking about before Garbage Time, before her very successful podcast, before getting some marketing from Fox as a soloist. I don't know if she had the leverage to dictate terms to Fox.
No, she didn't. And the other thing you have to keep in mind, too, is, you know, Katie was not a Jamie Horowitz hire. She was there
true
when Jamie Horowitz came aboard, so you also don't know what...
No, I know he likes her. He definitely likes her. She's a talent. As John said, I mean, what's not to like? I mean, Phil Mushnick doesn't like her, I assume because she's like Kevin Garnett, which doesn't make sense. But but most people, I think, even if her ratings are not good at the slot she's on, and John is right about that, I think people respect her fearlessness and her talent, and she's funny. And so there's no way Horowitz, you know, even with all our disagreements on his philosophy, I think likes independent thinkers, and she is that.
Oh, at the end of her contract, if she decides to leave, she'll have plenty of other networks raising their hand to talk.
I would think, Jimmy, you would agree with that. I think ESPN,
yeah.
I don't know if CBS and NBC would bring her on, but I think the ESPNs or Netflix types would definitely hire. All right, listen, let's get off this.
No, that was my point is now she can dictate her time slot. Back when she got hired, she couldn't.
All right, cool. Let's make this very quick here, John. We'll do a couple rapid fires on these. Michael Smith.
Can I interrupt for 1 second?
All right, Jimmy, this is not your show, but go ahead.
I'm going to make it my show. Can I give you another media story in 2017 I think will be a big deal? And
your previous answer was, all right, go ahead. Yes, please.
I have a feeling I don't want to use divorce, that's a strong word, but I do have a feeling the parting of the ways between ESPN and Chris Berman is going to get ugly.
Oh, that's interesting.
I don't think he wants to leave that show, and clearly ESPN wants him off that show, and I think there's going to be something there.
I think he goes to the NFL Network very quietly. John?
I think he'll stay at ESPN in a reduced role.
Yeah, so all three of us have different opinions there. I love that one. That might be the best moment of the show.
Thank you.
John Oran, Michael Smith, and Jemele Hill go into the 6 p.m. SportsCenter time slot in February. They are talented, but that is a very tough time slot now to get numbers, given that the world has changed and that kids are not running home from school to check out SportsCenter at 6 p.m. They're going to obviously make that personality driven, but Lindsay Zarniak prior to that did not have success in game-changing the ratings. ESPN has tried to do this thing where they have brought their talent live to games before games start. You know, hey, we're going to take you there live. It's not like that somehow game changed the ratings at 6 p.m. So while I respect their talent, I think they got a tough spot to try to change up those ratings. Listen, great for them. They got paid and they probably don't have to, they play it right. They're not going to have to, you know, their grandchildren are going to be set. But I don't know if they can make that turnaround happen for that time slot. What do you think?
I think it's a logical move to make. I think that the idea that the sports highlight show and what SportsCenter has been doesn't work at 6 o'clock is why you try to bring personality in there. And I think that they're two breakout stars on ESPN2, and it makes sense to bring them and try to make that work at 6 o'clock.
Jimmy, sort of the same idea again. At 6 o'clock, they'd be going up against local news and some places games. You know, depending on what Fox Sports 1 has there. Can that become a destination sports program?
I don't know if anything can become destination at 6 o'clock, but I think there's nothing wrong with trying that out. There's no negatives. I say, you know, go for it, see what happens. Yeah, I mean, I just think it's a rough time slot.
Yeah, there's no. I mean, listen, I have great respect for Jemele.
Yeah, we're all in agreement.
Jemele and Michael, I think we all respect their talent. We agree the time slot's tough. All right, we'll see what happens.
I do give ESPN credit for making the move from the standpoint that, you know, it's a big deal that ESPN is sort of admitting the sport highlight show is, it's not dead. You know, the oxygen tank is out and Dr. Jack Kevorkian is circling.
That's a reference there.
Yeah, that is
Dr.
a reference.
Jack Kevorkian.
Yeah, wow. John, and this is not to say Jemele and Michael do this, but I'm just sort of just jumping off this. But John, do you buy anything into the fact that there are people out there who see ESPN as too left-leaning, and if you bring on left-leaning personalities, and again, I'm not tagging Jemele Michael. I mean, you know, you follow them on their Twitter feeds, you sort of can know where they stand or don't. But do you buy it all that there's an audience that does not want to see any sports anchors who may be interested in progressive or stories involving athletes and politics or social justice, et cetera? Or is that just a nice narrative that certain people have run with to get some attention?
I think it's a good narrative to get attention, but I do believe that the whole stick to sports idea is real, especially given this election climate. Hmm. You know, when I turn on ESPN, I think a lot of people think, I don't want to see, you know, Trump versus Clinton. I'm purposely trying to avoid that, and I'm trying to use sports as a way to avoid that. And I think that one of the things that ESPN does that is a potential hole that a competitor could exploit is, you know, that they are sort of out in front on a lot of these social issues.
I actually agree with both of us there, me and you. I agree, too, that I don't think it's as overstated as some have pushed out. But I do think that, unlike the Kaepernick thing, I do think there definitely could be viewer backlash if you are perceived as, forget about even being right or left, just too political. And then I do think there are some viewers who, if you are perceived as being too much into athletes and social justice, that they may tune you out. You know, Jimmy, me and you talk about this offline a lot about, you know, when we tweet out politics or me and you comment about Trump, we've lost followers. I usually gain them back. But I remember one time, I think you said during the debate, you lost a ton. And that was just interesting to me as a real-time experiment in that there are people who even, let's say, on something like Twitter will at least drop you at the moment if you're a sports person talking politics.
People follow you for different reasons. I mean, there are some people who, you know, someone may follow you because someone else, you know, follows you, or an athlete retweeted you, or they want sports, they want pop culture, they want this. So, you know, it's not shocking that, you know, you say anything that, I mean, when I tweet about the Yankees, I lose followers too. So,
well, that I understand.
Yeah, see, exactly.
Yeah, but I always follow you back, Jimmy.
Yeah, same here.
Well, listen, that's appreciated. I do think, though, I disagree with both of you from this standpoint. If, you know, if you're flipping on SportsCenter or whatever show it is, and you have two anchors, you know, arguing about whether, you know, the Jets should start Ryan Fitzpatrick or Bryce Petty, is that going to keep you tuned in? Or if they're arguing about, you know, Trump versus Hillary, is that going to keep you tuned in? I do think there is some appeal to people not in politics talking politics in terms of.
So do I.
Outside,
yeah.
You know, and I also think we're having this discussion because it's an election year. And I think come January or February, I don't think this is going to be a big topic. But I'm sorry. How can you not say anything about what's going on?
Well, that's
in the past
that is interesting
months.
Because and John, you could sort of take this as delicately as you want, but you are someone who has intentionally not tweeted anything for the most part about politics on your Twitter feed. I follow it close, and you've told me that's something you don't do, which I totally respect, even if Jimmy and I are the opposite. So you are a great person to sort of counter what Jimmy just said, because you've made a specific decision not to mix these two things, right?
Yeah, I'm not part of the stick to sports school. I think everybody should treat their feed the way they want to treat it and be out there. I think most people follow me on Twitter for my insight on sports media. And so, I also don't believe I'm going to change anybody's viewpoint, political viewpoint, with a tweet. Yeah, look, I live in D.C. and I'm a reporter. I think that there's potentially an opportunity to be a political reporter. And why would I want to put anything out there that sort of shows a bias one way or another? So
Now that's smart.
I have three things that are sort of coming in and circling there, which is keeping me out of the political obit business.
There's no doubt that during this election, if anybody sort of gets a political job, you're going to be able. It's like Donald Trump. You'll be able to find a lot of old tweets. Sorry, Jimmy. Go ahead.
But do you ever get tempted, though?
Oh, yeah, all the time, and that's when I text
friends.
Oh, okay. I'm not able to discipline. I certainly have my own political opinions, but I don't need to put them out there to my Twitter audience.
Here's the thing, though. It doesn't even have to be about political opinions. I mean, just if you, you know, I mean, one of the things I'll tweet about a lot is not even so much, you know, Trump versus Hillary. But if you watch CNN or Fox News or MSNBC, the crazy things you see, I mean, there was something last week. I tweeted a video from CNN last week, or maybe it was a couple of weeks ago, where I think it was Kellyanne Conway was bashing Hillary's poll numbers, and Anderson Cooper was explaining to her that Trump's were lower, and he gave some snarky line like, you know, well, 42 is more than 37. I mean, it's not even so much this election is so different because it's not just Trump versus Hillary. Just the things you see in the media every day are newsworthy and oftentimes hilarious, which make for good tweets.
It's been crazy. John, you have better discipline than Jimmy and I.
One of the things I think Richard does well is, you know, and I try to do this too. So it's not just sports media. If I read a story that I think really is a good story that deals with politics or deals internationally, I'll tweet that out. So I'm not a, you know, sports media savant. I just really try to stay away from anything that shows opinion as it comes to the political realm.
Right. Producer Lou Pellegrino is just going to have that drop in there. One of the things Richard does really well, we're just going to drop that like 18 times in this podcast as a backdrop. All right, John, you today or this week, you wrote a love letter to Richard Santomir of the New York Times, basically congratulating him on his distinguished sports media career. For those who don't know, Richard Santomir was a longtime sports media and sports business reporter at the New York Times. He announced, or the paper announced, I guess, last week that he was moving to the obit section, which is, I would almost say, a promotion, given just how historic and how memorable and how important the job of obit writer is at the New York Times. But, you know, I'm busting on Richard. We all respect him and know him. But, John, this is a big deal because Richard Santomir, by virtue of being at the New York Times and by virtue of being on the beat for 25 years, I think he's the most influential sports media reporter that exists. He's got the paper, and he's got his own, what's the word I'm looking for? Gravitas is the word I'm looking for. He would be the person that most, I think, network presidents would go to if they were breaking a story. John Skipper called Richard Santomir when they were getting rid of Bill Simmons. I mean, both of us get our scoops too, but, you know, Santomir was sort of the dean of this beat. And when he leaves, not only is it big that he leaves, but it's big because I don't know if the New York Times is going to replace the beat. To me, that's something big in terms of sort of mainstreamers who cover this. Deadspin, you know, Big Lead, Awful Announcing. There'll always be people writing about sports media. Those who think that's not the case are just, they have no idea what they're talking about. The page views are too good. There's too much interest. But John, this is a big deal to me because the New York Times combined like the reputation of being the best paper in the world, or one of the best papers in the world, and covering the stuff that we cover. So what's your read on Santomir leaving this beat?
So when we started at our respective beats, I started at SBJ in 2006. You started about the same time at SI, right?
Yeah, writing sports media about the same time.
Right, yep. Writing sports media, yeah. I mean, there was Michael Hiestand and McCarthy over at USA Today, which right. had a robust sports media bit. There was Santomir, of course. I mean, there were sports media reporters at almost every single major daily in the U.S. And, you know, the when you think about it now, Hiestand left. McCarthy took a job with FS1, I think, right?
Wow, that's a shot, John. You hear that, Jimmy? That's
I know.
That's John's first shot of the podcast. Wow.
I thought it was a fact. Very shot.
Wow.
I think we're all just jealous that he has a very good source over there.
He's breaking a lot of stories there, for sure.
But, you know, and now Richard at the New York Times is leaving, and it's like, you mentioned Awful Announcing and the Big Lead, and there's still a lot of blogs, you know, Deadspin covers.
Kevin Draper, right?
And there are a lot of blogs that are still going to do it. But having Santomir leave the sports media beat at the New York Times, so it's Richard, who's been there for 25 years, but it's also the New York Times.
Right.
If the New York Times follows what almost every other newspaper has done in the country, you know, we're not going to see a sports media beat over there. And so it's wild when you think about the days of Rudy Marnsky, when there were, you know, 50 to 75, you know, sports media reporters on these conference calls. Now you barely get 10.
Yeah, and this is a mainstream thing because Deadspin proved a decade ago that this beat was undercovered and they game-changed everything. They certainly game-changed everything with ESPN. I'm always thankful to Deadspin because I think they proved that there's an audience for this content on a daily basis, and that's helped all of us, even though, John, you do things differently than Deadspin, as do I. But, Jimmy, you know, you grew up in a city, as I did, with two sports media people who write, you know, almost near daily, and Phil Mushnick and Bob Raisman. So you've grown up on this, and for you, that still exists. But John is correct in that the rest of the country, there used to, Bob Wolfley would be in Green Bay. You know, you'd have guys at the California papers. That doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, Ed Sherman in Chicago.
Yeah, Ed Sherman in Chicago. So it's just interesting, Jimmy, and I know you love the stuff and read it to get your take, that a lot of this has morphed into the blogosphere from mainstream in a very short amount of time, in essentially 10 years.
No, you hit the nail right on the head, I think. Online sort of swallowed up that beat. You're a major, major person who's responsible for that. And I think, you know, there is an audience. I said this at SI from the day I worked there. You know this. There is an audience for sports media stuff. I think it's hard for papers maybe to do it on a local level. I mean, here in New York, it's easy to do because you have all these sports teams. You have SNY. You have the Yes Network. You have the MSG Network. And I don't count Mushnick because he's not a sports media guy. That ship sailed a long, long time ago. And Raceman does it a little bit, and Raceman does a good job with the local stuff, but it's really a national gig now. So, a guy like yourself, Deadspin, Sports Business Journal, Big Lead, I mean, that's where people are going to get that information.
John, do you anticipate that in the next 5 years, more people will be doing this? Or do you think, not that I want to use Richard as some kind of flag post, but does the Times getting out of this, at least for the moment, signal something that we're going to see less? Maybe it does signal that, at least in the newspaper world, we're going to see less, but I don't buy for a second that I think there's going to be more sports media coverage heading forward, because you're going to see people covering the Netflixes and the Twitters. And if it's not Rudy Martsky and USA Today, it just means it's going to morph into Vice or Vox or Recode or wherever. Someone else is going to, in my opinion, going to pick up the vacuum.
Yeah, I mean, this much I know. Every time somebody at SBJ writes about ESPN, it becomes one of the most read stories online for that week.
Right.
I don't think that changes. Here in D.C., you know, you mentioned all of the RSNs there. We have, you know, Mid-Atlantic Sports Network, Masson. We have, you know, Comcast Sportsnet, Mid-Atlantic. We have every single one of the local broadcast affiliates has their own sports department here. We have all the major teams represented, plus some in Baltimore, all the major colleges represented. I think there's still local beats that are thriving that have people that are popular. So I expect at some point that it's going to come back, because I know that there's an interest. I know from the stories that I write and the stories that everybody else writes on ESPN and Fox Sports and CBS. So, I mean, the interest is still out there.
All right, quick list, last two, John. I know I told you I'm going to get you out of here, and I'm going to get you out of here within 5 minutes. All right, Jimmy, the first one for you. People were asking on Twitter for your take on Mike Francesa in 2017. One, do you think he actually leaves the Fan? And two, if he does leave the Fan, does he go into some kind of podcast the way Kornheiser did or something else?
If he leaves, he definitely goes into some sort of podcast, and I could see him maybe doing even a one-hour local TV gig on MSG or something like that.
Could see that,
when
definitely.
He first announced he was leaving, I said, no way, I don't buy it. Negotiating ploy. I then changed my mind. I believed it. I'm sort of back on the fence now, as we're 1 year away from that happening. Here's an interesting thing about this, and I'll go quick. When he talked about this, he said he would wrap up his FAN run after next year's Super Bowl. Okay, so that would be January 2018.
Right.
He announced a few weeks ago his last date on air is going to be December 15th of 2017. Something's fishy. And I don't know if it's going to be a clean break from FAN for him. This is what I'll say. I don't understand why he'd ever leave that gig. I can't think of one reason he'd ever leave that gig. For the money he makes, he has summers off. He works from 1 to 6, and he makes $3 to $4 million a year. I don't understand why he'd leave it. So it's one of those, I have to see it to believe it. If I had a bet, he's probably going to leave, and then he'll go do a podcast, maybe an hour local TV show or something like that.
I like that. MSG one's interesting. All right, Jimmy, quickly, literally 30 seconds for you on this. Will Artie Lang ever appear on the Howard Stern show again?
maybe on the last day of the show ever in history, but I would probably say no. Right. I think he burned the bridge last week.
My producer, Lou, who is very tight with the show, says no, too.
Yeah.
I'm dying to ask, because you're the biggest Stern fan I know. Artie's criticisms, were they legit?
I mean, the show is obviously more PC than it's ever been, and Howard is definitely shifted into becoming an interviewer extraordinaire. But I don't think it's because of this woman that everyone, this Marcy Turk, which is what everyone wants to say. I think it's because he's 63 years old and he can't really throw baloney at women's asses anymore. I think that's why he shifted. And for Artie and people to want him to do the stuff he did 20 years ago makes zero sense to me.
Yeah, one day, Jimmy, I'd love to do, we should just do a Stern podcast like they do on the wrap-up show, but it will not be this date. All right, John, quickly, because you have to go. Will Mike Greenberg in 2017 leave Mike and Mike for his own SportsCenter style show on ESPN?
Oh, gosh.
All right, I take that back. I take that back. Not SportsCenter, but some GMA morning type of show. Will he leave Mike and Mike?
I have no inside knowledge of that. But I've seen the report, so I'm going to come out and say yes, that's going to happen.
I think it's going to
happen. Oh, my God.
I think it's going to happen, too, and that will be very interesting in terms of all sorts of dominoes breaking up. All right, listen, the guests have been John Orand of the Sports.
Wait, do we get to ask you a question?
No, John has a heart out in literally like 3 minutes.
You know, Jimmy. I want to hear Jimmy's question.
All right, Jimmy, go ahead. One question.
I noticed today.
Right.
On SI.com, the MMQB.
I know what you're going to ask.
We had a column from who might be your favorite person in sports.
So technically, you know, I think I've been saying
your thoughts.
I think I've been saying in this podcast, by the way, it's November 1st. It's truly October 31st. It's Halloween. And what a question to get on Halloween. I will say this. Listen, Peter King has become very tight with Jason Whitlock. You'll have to ask Peter that. They've whatever hatchet they may have had, they buried, and they've appeared on each other's podcast. I know he's appeared on Peter's podcast. And so, you know, that's a budding, a beautiful budding relationship there.
So when you logged onto your site today and you wanted to see your column and you see the front of SI.com and Jason Whitlock's there, what's going through your head?
You ever see the Simpsons episode where, like, the fake Elvis shoots the TV? It's a little bit like that. No, listen. I'm going to be a team player here, and so Peter King has been very good to me. I love working for the MMQB, and he has every right to assign whoever he wants to that site.
Colleagues with Whitlock, Clay Travis, and Colin Coward, can you give me a power rankings of who you get along with the best?
Wow. Who are the three again? Might be Coward, and that's ironic if he's number one. Colleagues is a weird one there because, you know, we have a business partnership with them, but editorially we are as separate can be. So, but that said, Jimmy, you're not wrong. Today it's the MMQB with Jason Whitlock. Who knows what tomorrow will bring, including my updated resume. All right, listen. Thank you very much. John Orand of the Sports Business Daily and Journal. Please catch him on those publications as well as following him on Twitter. Obviously, one of the most connected people in the sports media world. Must follow. Jimmy Traina, writing for Awful Announcing, The Comeback, formerly of Sports Illustrated. Again, another must follow. Follow him on Twitter at Jimmy Traina. Guys, if the numbers are good, we'll do this again. If the numbers are not, it'll just be Orand. That's basically, I've decided that. Thank you very much for joining me on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
That was fun. Thank you, Richard.
All right, back in the studio, my thanks to my producer, Lou Pellegrino. Thanks to the guests, John Orand and Jimmy Traina. Previous podcasts, if you missed them, Elliot Friedman of Hockey Night in Canada and Sportsnet, and David Faradhold, the fine reporter at the Washington Post, may win a Pulitzer Prize for his reporting on Donald Trump and charitable giving. Got some really good podcasts coming up for you in the next couple weeks. Think you're going to enjoy them. Until then, my thanks to Ben Eagle, Ryan Hunt, Alan Kim, Bette Marston, and the rest of the SI crew. Thanks to Digital Media. This is Richard Deitch. We'll see you again on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
This has been a Digital Media production. Find your voice.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.